what?
We're back!
Yeah! You did it, Mom. Proud of you. Woo woo.
I can do it. It's just your thing, so I don't. But clearly that was my invitation to do it.
Yeah, it was your invitation.
I got it.
I'm Daphne, and that's my mom, Gail.
Hi.
In case you've never been here before, you should probably listen to the episode before this one. You know, get filled in, because this is a two-parter. The second part is today, right now, happening at this moment, recording
as we speak.
Yeah, it's happening. It's here.
This is now.
How you doing?
How you doing?
I'm okay.
I'm doing.
Yeah, right. I had a pretty lazy day today because I have the worst headache in the fucking world right now.
Oh my gosh. Must be in there.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good.
Had a migraine.
But that's okay.
For days.
I'm still here because I don't have to read a computer screen.
Nice. Well, yeah. Thanks.
All I have to do is talk, and I'm good with that no matter what. I love the sound of my own voice.
Headache or no headache, I'm all here for the chatter.
Yep. Yep. All right. Are you ready for my disturbing fact?
I'm ready. But you said it was gross, so I don't want to, but I guess we have to because it's our shtick.
It's our shtick, yeah. And guess who's in control? Me. It's my disturbing fact.
And you're in the driver's seat.
Well, you're in the driver's seat. I'm just the disturbing factor. Oh, wait, no. I am in the driver's seat. I forgot.
And I think you said it wrong when you said you're the disturbing factor.
Well, more like I'm the one reading it, but I am also the disturbing factor.
I feel like that's
if
not
you could see my outfit
true.
Today.
Oh yeah, that's like
I have
no
these
words.
Really cool pants on. I love these pants. They just don't work with the shirt.
She's wearing like these tie-dye. They're like,
well, one leg is like a traditional tie-dye. The other leg is like a zebra tie-dye. And then I have a Betty Boop top on that's like black and then has the bleach tie-dye on it.
Yeah, it's a look.
It is. It's a look. It's awesome. I enjoy my looks.
Yeah.
So I came, when I got dressed, I was like, I'm in the hippie era of my life.
Or been the colorblind era of your life.
There's also that. Okay. This is a marine life, if you will, centric disturbing fact. Several of them, because they're all like related.
Okay.
I don't know where to begin with this one. So, dolphins, females, they, you know what they eat, right? Fish.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'll use the head of the fish to masturbate. They'll like bite the head, like the body off the fish and keep the head and then use the head to masturbate.
I have no words, especially the way you're like moving your hand while you're saying it.
I'm just showing like take off the head.
And then you kind of shook your hand.
No, that's for what's next. Male dolphins have been known to masturbate by wrapping live eels around their junk.
Electric eels?
Yeah, electric eels. Well, it's funny because this thing said that they learned the difference very quickly between electric versus other eels.
I'll bet they do.
And it said that their penises are very prehensile, they're like tentacles almost. So that's how they like wrap everything around there. Yeah, just stew on that one.
Yeah, this is such an awkward conversation to be listening to that you're having with yourself.
I think it's funny.
Yeah.
And then that dolphins are like basically the humans of the ocean, considering that, you know, they know how to masturbate and they get so depressed when they're humans, if they like get attached to a human and their human doesn't come back, that sometimes they drown themselves to death.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
It's really sad. What do you think? That's my disturbing facts.
Well, that was educational and interesting and then depressing. So
and
thanks.
Disturbing.
Yeah. It was all wrapped up into one. It became disturbing.
Yeah, that's why I said to you, I like looked at you and I giggled. I was like, it's going to be disturbing. It sure was. All right, Mama, get into part two.
Okay, this is part two of the Tyneside Strangler. So if you didn't listen to the first part, you should do that before you listen to the second part. But whatever, I also noticed on our Sid and Nancy episode that like the first one has a ton of listens and the second one doesn't have hardly any. So I guess nobody really gives a shit about the second part.
It was like backwards for the Samuel Little, though. It was like parts two and three had more listens than part one.
Whatever.
So it's like, what are you doing?
Just start in the middle. In the beginning middle.
In the beginning middle.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I should listen to part one before you listen to part two. But if you don't, whatever. It's on you. I don't. You do you.
You do you, boo-boo.
Yeah, exactly. So where we left you last week, Mary and Norma had just been sentenced. Mary was sentenced. She was found guilty of manslaughter for the two counts of Brian and Martin.
Which is such bullshit that it's manslaughter. I don't know if it's different in the UK than it is here, like our definition of manslaughter. But I don't know that there was premeditation to it, but it definitely sounds like she purposefully, maliciously had the intent to murder.
Well, and it was that diminished responsibility or something. I can't remember what they called it, but basically, like, her mental capacity wasn't really there to have thought it out or planned it out or whatever. And then Norma, the girl that was with her on the second murder, her accomplice on Brian Howe's murder, got off on everything, but she got 3 years of probation for vandalism of the nursery school that they vandalized. And then she was placed under psychiatric care during her probation. So anyway, that's where we left you off. And so now we're going to pick it back up again.
Right, these two little bitches.
So after Mary's sentencing, she was sent to an all-boys facility because
I'm sure she got a very warm welcome in there.
Well, the prison system wasn't equipped to take an 11-year-old girl, you know? So she couldn't go to adult prison, and she couldn't go to a mental hospital, and she was too dangerous to go to a troubled youth facility because obviously they had those, but they weren't housing murderers were 11 years old.
They needed an in-between.
Right.
They had to, it's like the Goldilocks, just right.
Exactly. So she went to a facility called the Red Bank Reform School, and she was housed in a special unit that had high security. And Red Bank was a well-designed facility, and it had a supportive staff, and they actually tried to reform youthful offenders and not just warehouse them.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it was good. So the program was run by a man named James Dixon, who was a former Navy man. Who was a former Navy man. Who was known for
sailor.
Who was known for his strong moral influence. The structure and discipline that Mr. Dixon provided was just what Mary needed, because obviously
she's fucked up and doesn't have that in her life.
Exactly.
Which could also, I'm sure, maybe perhaps be partly attributed to what the fuck went wrong with her.
Yes, exactly. Of course, at first she was averse to this kind of structure and discipline because she wasn't used to it. But eventually she came to respect and actually even loved Mr. Dixon. He was kind of a father figure for her. And the only father figure that she had known was Billy Bell, who loved Mary and treated her well. But also, he was a career criminal, so obviously he's not like the ideal role model. And in 1969, he was imprisoned for armed robbery, and that was the end of him being able to visit Mary, because remember, she went in 1968.
Yeah.
So, like, a year or less later, whatever, that he went away for armed robbery.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, it does suck.
His life decisions.
It does suck.
And for Mary, that, you know, she lost out on the only person that was a father figure to her.
Yeah.
Besides her new father figure. The better versus the lesser of the role models.
Yeah, exactly. Betty started to visit Mary at Red Bank, and Betty's her mom, right? And Betty would wear lingerie under her clothes or just smuggle in lingerie, and she would have Mary put it on, and she would take pictures of her to sell to the tabloids. She also had Mary write letters and poems that she could also sell to the press. So,
what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
So she's exploiting the entire situation for her own gain.
Exactly.
Solid parenting skills there.
Yep. Yep, 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 yep. After Betty's visits, Mary would often become agitated and act out aggressively. And she would tell the staff that she didn't want her mother to visit anymore. Then after a short time, she would want to see her again because, you know, it's that classic abuse, you know, like your abuser's the only one that you really that loves you or that you love or whatever. It's that thing. So the staff at Red Bank came to hate Betty's visits, and they always seemed to set Mary's progress backwards. And on one occasion, Betty actually told the staff not to leave her alone with Mary because she would rather kill her than see her in prison.
What the fuck?
Right? So, yeah. Yeah, she's a little bit of a loon.
Yeah, no shit about that.
Exactly. Red Bank had a philosophy of focusing on the present, and according to the Red Bank way of thinking, dwelling on the past and past experiences were detrimental. So therefore, Mary, during her time at Red Barn, her upbringing and the murders she carried out were not addressed. Psychiatrists thought that Mary was blocking out her troubled past, and she had a series of counselors who mostly really didn't get to know her at all because she was just so closed off, you know?
Well, I'm sure. I mean, I have zero sympathy for her, right? I have sympathy for the way she was brought up. I don't have sympathy for the way that she was, you know?
For what she did?
For what she did, yeah. For how she went about her own troubles.
Right.
But I like, yeah, I do. I don't know. I don't know where I'm getting at here. I guess that it's okay to have sympathy for shitty situations, but don't sympathize with the decisions and the actions that they took.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. So the staff at Red Barn found her sometimes to be manipulative, and she picked fights with the boys, and she claimed that she had a twin sister named Paula. So she's getting a little,
what's the right word I'm looking for?
Unhinged.
Delusional?
Well, yeah, delusional, unhinged.
Yeah.
Trying to create a different persona.
So was she the only girl in here?
She was the only girl in there. And they kept her like in a totally separate area.
Yeah, that's what you said, that she was in like a high security area.
But it's a reform school. So there's literal actual school. They're attending school. They're learning to do things. They're learning to get along with others. They're doing all these things. So she's interacting with the boys like during the day.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's how.
So she's not totally in solitary.
No, not at all. Not at all. Because she's in school and like, you know, learning to be a human being.
Yeah, and apparently picking on the guys.
Yeah, well, because she's angry. She's obviously an angry little girl.
Yeah.
She's got issues.
Very sad.
It is sad. Eventually, being at Red Bank really helped Mary. She did well in her studies, and her behavior greatly improved under the love and support of Mr. Dixon and his wife, who really took her under their wing. They saw something in Mary other than a murderer. The Dixons sometimes would take Mary into their home on the weekends and holidays, and they really treated her like a daughter.
That's really nice. I'm surprised that they weren't fearful when she went to their home. Did they have other kids? Did it say anything about this?
It didn't say anything about it, but I got the impression from what I read that they were an older couple because he was a retired Navy guy.
Right.
So he's not like a young guy.
Right. And they're obviously very compassionate human beings to be able to do this.
Yeah. To work in an environment like this.
Well, you said and they owned it.
It was run by them. I think it was a state facility because obviously she's imprisoned by the
government.
Yeah. A government run facility. There you go.
Yeah. No, I was picking up what you're putting down.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just going to say that takes a lot of compassion, but I would be worried if like I had other kids and she's still so angry.
Yeah.
Like what the fuck would happen?
And even if they had grandkids or whatever, they probably weren't exposing her to them, but that there was like nothing written about that. It was just that they really cared about her and they really loved her and they really like wanted her to succeed, you know?
Well, that's good.
It is.
I guess everybody's got to have somebody looking out for them.
Everybody does have to have someone looking out for them. Very well said again, Daph.
Thank you. Yeah. I guess I was thinking I was a little loopy maybe with my disturbing fact because of the headache I'm experiencing, but maybe
it's making you more lucid.
Perhaps. It's doing something to me.
Mary was only allowed to stay at Red Barn until she was 16 years old, and then she was transferred to a women's facility. It's like a full-on prison at 16.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
It does, but it's sad.
It is sad, but I mean...
Yeah, but she killed two...
If you don't want to do the time, don't do the crime.
Exactly. The Dixons tried to fight for Mary. They talked about her progress that she made while she was at Red Barn and how well she was doing with her studies. And like, she's a bright, intelligent young woman and like, she should be nurtured and not just tossed into this justice system facility prison. That's basically just a warehouse.
Yeah.
You know? She's not going to get what she was getting at Red Barn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she went to a facility called Style. I think Style is what it was called.
Okay.
How you pronounce it.
I'm like, you're looking at me and I can't see it. You're doing the thing to me that I do to you.
Right?
Like, she's looking at me with the eyes of, did I say that right? Did I? And she's like looking at her page at the same time. And I'm like, I don't know. I can't see it.
Oh, no.
It's a little different since we switched to computers to do our notes on. So that way we weren't printing everything all the time. And so now we can't look over each other's shoulders to see what we're doing.
Well, it's more efficient. Anyway, to do it on the laptop.
It is, absolutely. Because in those moments where we go, I need to Google this. Yeah. And you just pause the show and Google real quick and we'd be right back on the air.
That's right.
Sorry.
That's okay. You're good. So while in prison, she suffered serious setbacks in her behavior because this was, again, it was a true prison, not a reform. You know, it was a warehousing situation. Oh,
yeah. Nobody's going to be caring about her there.
Yeah. Not a reform situation.
Nobody.
She was a rebellious prisoner and was in trouble a lot. She turned into a true, quote, in her words, con in order to survive the hierarchy of prison. And she became butch. She even put a sock in her pants to replicate a penis and making herself up like she had stubble on her face.
Why?
Because she wanted to have like a girlfriend to protect her. Oh. So like being in a relationship in prison, then you're not like getting passed around. So that way she could be in a relationship with someone. But she took on the role of the male.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's odd. I was going to ask you if she was the youngest girl in there. Do you know?
I have no idea. No idea. I didn't look that up. This was a lot. Like, doing this research on this one was a lot, and there's a lot of information. I've never
heard anything you're talking about in this episode. So, yeah, I've heard, she killed two boys, and then
that's it.
That, like, eventually, you know, what happens in her life. I mean, not any of this, but, like, the later down the road stuff, which I'm sure you're going to get to.
I will get to it.
Yeah, so I won't spoil that. But, like, that's the extent of what I've heard. Like, she killed two kids and then finger popped her own asshole into the sunset. Yeah, basically.
What was that laugh?
I don't. Mine or yours?
Yours.
I don't know.
A laugh. A
delirious laughter.
Right. Mary became like angry. She was closed off and she had to become crafty again in order to survive prison, you know?
Yeah.
When Betty heard about Mary being butch, she said, quote, Jesus Christ, what's next? You're a murderer and now you're a lesbian?
Fuck.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Thanks, Mom.
I think one of those is definitely a bad thing and the other is a personal decision.
Yeah, personal choice. Mary even went so far as to ask a doctor for a sex change operation, but she was denied. Later, Mary would say it was the idea of not being me that appealed to her.
Well, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think that's the twin sister thing, too.
Yeah.
Is like, push off stuff on someone who's not you.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That sounds true. That's like, I mean, we see that all the time that people, you know, not like transgendered people. I'm not talking about those people, you know. I'm talking about like the Amanda Bynes who like dyed her hair fucking bleach motherfucking blonde to get away from herself. Or Britney Spears who shaved her head in a crisis.
Yeah.
You know, like the extreme, like trying not to be yourself, trying to be someone else.
Right. Change this, change that, and you won't be you.
Yeah.
But I hate to tell everybody, no matter where you go, there you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. In 1977, she was transferred to a less secure facility from which she escaped.
Huh.
She and another woman escaped together, and they were picked up hitchhiking by two young men. They went to a bar and then to a motel, and in her short time out, Mary lost her virginity. The guy she slept with later sold his story to the tabloids and claimed that she had escaped from jail so that she could get pregnant.
Oh, and did she?
No, she did not. And he just, you know.
Well, it only takes one time. That's why I was wondering.
Yeah, no. And I mean, he just
was being a douche.
Yeah, he's just sensationalizing.
Like her mom.
Yeah, exactly. To sell shit. Exactly. Making some profit off of his encounter with Mary. And then, of course, they were caught because they were looking for them and their pictures were out and all of that. And then people were like, oh, hey, I think they're in that motel. So they got them and they went back and they did. Mary ended up doing like 28 days in solitary confinement or something like that. But then, you know, she was able to continue staying in this less secure facility. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So they just kept her there after that.
They're not like, oh, you ruined your one chance.
No, no, they didn't. They, you know, I mean, I don't understand, but they didn't. And then after that time, Mary was moved to a hostel. So like a halfway house situation for a few months before she was paroled in 1980.
Okay.
During this time,
she's... And what year did she commit these crimes?
1968. And when she got sentenced, remember, it was...
So she was 23.
Yes, she was 23. So it was... When she got sentenced, remember, they said it was for an indeterminate amount of time.
Yes.
So I guess it was based on her rehabilitation and her progress in the prison system.
Right. How well she'd fare being reintroduced to society.
Yeah. And so I guess they figured that she was okay.
Okay.
That she could, gotcha. She could do it. During this time, she started dating a married man who ended up getting her pregnant. And unfortunately for Mary, she was faced with a moral dilemma. And I say unfortunately for her. So like, I don't want to be like too controversial because there's a lot of like...
Just spit it out.
We'll get there. But, you know, there's definitely reasons to feel sorry for Mary, even though what she did was heinous. And unforgivable. That's why I said
we could sympathize for the shitty situation she is in, but you know, we can't sympathize with what she did, with how she responded to the
shitty situation.
Yeah, by killing two little boys that were absolutely defenseless because exactly. She wanted to take control over something smaller than her.
Mm-hmm. She liked to hurt things that were smaller than her that couldn't fight back. She literally said that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, we can't feel sorry for that part of who she is. No. But we can feel sorry for
What took her there.
Yeah.
Again, Mary got pregnant. She's faced with a moral dilemma. She definitely didn't think that she could keep a child and raise it because she's like freshly out of prison. The guy that got her pregnant is married. So... She's like, fuck, what am I going to do? So she ended up having an abortion. And she would later say that it was so hard to have the abortion after 12 years in prison for killing two babies. The first thing I did when I got out was kill the baby inside me. She just felt like she didn't have any other choice, which probably she didn't. I mean, you know, there's always adoption, but
she did what she felt was necessary to do because there's definitely a difference between having a baby that people want to adopt or having a baby that you want, that you can take care of, versus like giving birth to an orphan.
Yeah. That's going to just go to a state facility, I guess, most likely. Yeah. Mary was released on May 14th. So she's released from the hostel halfway house place, May 14th, 1980. And she stayed in Suffolk, which is where the hostel was. She was given a new identity and she was granted lifelong anonymity because, you know, of what she did, people are going to always be hounding her, maybe trying to kill her. And even though she did a terrible thing, they on some level wanted to protect her because she was a minor when she committed the offense.
Right. So question, do you have her new name?
Mm-mm.
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Nope.
Paula.
Right. A new name and all of the appropriate forms of ID to go with it were given to her. Upon her release, both herself and Betty had both requested that she not be released into Betty's care. Her Aunt Kathy offered to take her in, but Mary said she didn't feel right about that. A staff member and also another inmate's family offered to take Mary in, but they were both denied. Mary ended up staying with a Quaker family. So, you know, very quiet, low-key family is what she ended up with. And obviously they're working with...
Why did she have to be released to go back to someone?
Because she couldn't just be on her own.
They do that a lot. They just like kick people out. Don't care where you go. Just you're out now. Bye.
Well, not in this case, I guess.
Okay.
Because she was on like heavy duty probation.
And why didn't she go back to be with the Navy, the Navy retiree?
Because I don't think that was an option to her.
Okay.
To be like, oh, hey, can I go live with you guys? Well, and at some point, I don't know if it's before she was released or after she's released, but some point, like right around this time, Mr. Dixon died. And she was like super upset about that because he was like one of the most positive influences in her life for sure.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't include that in my notes. So
that would be upsetting.
Yeah.
But I understand.
And it wasn't an opportunity that was presented. So she ended up going to live with this Quaker family. And her first job was at a children's nursery.
Oh, my gosh. Are you fucking joking?
Nope, I'm not fucking joking.
Oh my God, pinch me. This is not April Fool's Day. Like, what?
Yeah.
A children's facility. Okay, fucking Carla Homolka. Right. Like, what the fuck?
But obviously, the probation deemed this as inappropriate work for her because she's having to check in with her probation. She's like, hey, I got a job at a nursery, a children's nursery. And they're like, no.
Not the fuck.
No.
What the fuck they're is like, going yeah, no, on?
That's not, you're not doing that. So then she found work with a painter and she really liked that kind of creative outlet that that gave her.
Oh,
she,
yeah. Related to her vandalism she did back in the day.
I don't know about that, but I think kind of low key and just getting to, I don't know. Just
painter, like painting homes or like painting artwork?
Didn't say, but I would assume it's like painting houses and stuff like that.
Okay.
So just because it said a painter and probably an artist wouldn't hire someone to work with them.
Well, you never know.
You do never know. But she enjoyed her new job, and she also enjoyed spending time with Liz and Jeff, the family that she lived with. Jeff at one point offered to take her on a business trip to Newcastle, and she was so happy to go. They went by Betty's house so Mary could say hi. But on the way, because Mary asked, hey, can we go say hi? Can I say hi to my mom? Can you just take me by there so I can say hi?
Yeah.
But on the way to Betty's house, they passed the house that Mary grew up in, and a flood of memories came rushing back to her. And she said she didn't even really remember the rest of that day, except that, and she didn't even remember if she saw Betty that day or not. Like, she just...
How are you getting all of this if she was granted an anonymity?
And... Because she did a biography. She helped a biographer write about her.
Oh, so she's like a ghost.
Yeah. A ghost, right? Well, she was interviewed by this biographer that wrote this book about her. And so I'll get to that later. And it's not the book. It's not the book that I got all my information from because I didn't read that book. It's a different book that I read that I cited in the notes.
Okay. I was just wondering. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, wait, if she has a new name, completely anonymous, like, why are these... Why do we know what happened to her?
Because she worked with a biographer.
Well, I know that the whole Carla Homolka thing, why we know about her is because people have spotted her.
Yeah.
And I don't think she was granted any anonymity.
No, I don't think she was either. She just changed her name and moved. But yeah, I don't think that they granted her any kind of anonymity.
Yeah, that's another fucking fucked up one.
Yeah.
Another fucking fucked up one. Fuck.
So, again, she didn't really remember that day at all. She didn't remember if she'd seen Betty that day. The only thing that she really remembered that day, besides going by where she used to live and having all of those memories flood back to her, is that Jeff took her to a quiet restaurant that night, and she felt, like, comfortable enough with him at that point to tell him why she'd been in prison and about her recent abortion. And she said that after she, like, spilled everything to him, that he just looked at her across the table in kind of a father way and just said, you look tired, which she was, like, she's, you know, has gone through a lot.
And yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I know I sound
so... How do you tell someone you killed two kids?
I don't know. And then you had an abortion.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. And I know I sound sympathetic, but you'll see why when we get there.
Well, like I beat a dead horse on this, that right. It's okay to have sympathy for situations, just not for how people handle the situations.
Exactly.
Like, one that I am super fascinated with as fuck is Richard Ramirez. And I feel horrible for the little boy, Richard Ramirez. What I don't feel horrible for is who he turned out to be.
Yeah, that's, I can agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel horrible for whatever circumstances, which clearly were not good ones that she was brought up in. But by the same token, like, I can't feel sorry for how she chose to go about that.
No. Nope, nope, nope.
But I mean, that's cool and good for her that, you know, she's finding people who care about her. Probably couldn't be me.
A few months after this encounter or this happened, it was around Christmas time, and she was leaving the house that she lived in, and then she noticed that she was being followed by a car, and she thought it was like a tabloid reporter who had found her, and she turned around to give the reporter a piece of her mind, but instead it was her new stepfather, whose name is Georgie, and he told Mary that Betty was sorry for everything and wanted to have one more chance to be a mother. And Betty was in the car waiting for an answer. And so the three of them drove back to Liz and Jeff's house to talk to them about this, right? About what, about, you know,
this situation.
This situation, right? And Jeff said he was fine with them spending the day with Mary, but if Mary left and went back with Betty and George, that she would no longer be welcome in their home.
Oh, fuck.
Which is, you know,
telling.
Fair. Reasonable. It's reasonable. Mary moving back with Betty in his eyes was not a good idea because it would undo all the hard work that Mary and everyone else had done and put into her rehabilitation. But Mary thought it was just another person trying to assert authority over her, and she didn't see it as a step backwards at the time.
Okay.
So Betty made Mary feel like, so they went and hung out, right? And then while they're hanging out, Betty made Mary feel like she didn't belong with a Quaker family, but back with people of her, quote, own kind. So Mary left and went back with Betty and Georgie.
Of her own kind? Murderers?
No. Just like, you know, like I said, it was the lower middle class neighborhood that they grew up in that, you know, that she felt like. Betty was like, these are our people.
So Mary burned the bridge with Jeff.
Mm-hmm. She burned the bridge with them.
Okay.
Betty was an alcoholic and she was also a pill popper. And she spent most of her time totally intoxicated. During the time that Mary was with Betty from about Christmas until New Year's, Mary spent most of that time herself at the bars. And she was intoxicated right along with Betty. She'd take pills and stuff, but she was drinking. And Betty would introduce Mary to everybody as her cousin. And
what the fuck?
Right. Well, because, you know, she's anonymity and all that. So she could be like, this is my daughter. But it's also a distancing thing.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. My brain wasn't like the anonymity thing. My thing was like that she doesn't want to like claim that that's her kid.
Well, I think that's more it. Is that it's a distancing thing, like distancing her from, because she doesn't have to say it's my daughter Mary that killed someone. She or killed two kids. It's my daughter Ruby.
Right. It's my daughter Paula.
Right. Exactly. So Mary decided that if she didn't get out of that situation, she wouldn't be able to get out. So she went to her probation officer to find a new place to live, and she found a new place to live, and she was in and out of waitressing jobs. And during the time that she was in and out of these waitressing jobs, she met someone who encouraged her to go to school and to make something of herself so she could have a better chance at a better chance at stable employment and a better life, because this person recognized that she's smart. You know, she is a smart girl, a smart woman. Like, everybody said that about her from the beginning, that she was smart.
Well, yeah, that's why they also said she was manipulative and all those things too.
Right. That is true. Mary applied for a grant and she was given enough money in the grant money to attend class and also live on campus and not to have to work, just focus on school. So she was taking classes in psychology, philosophy, and English literature. And her goal was to become a teacher.
Fuck. Why? Why does she want to do these things? Is she trying to, like, repent for her own sins? Like, fuck.
Maybe.
Why is it that she's like, I want to work at a nursery, but you just killed two kids. I want to be a teacher, but you killed two kids.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
I don't know. I can't answer those questions.
That's, like, the only thing I can think of is, what the fuck? Like, why would that be something that you would, in your head, process as an okay thing for you to want to do? I think children, society, animals, plants, maybe stay away from those things.
Stay away from living things.
Yeah.
In January of 1982, she was called into the director of the university's office, and he told her that her probation officer had informed him that she wouldn't be allowed to work in the field that she was studying. And the probation people just thought that she should just quit and not keep going to school, but he saw her potential and that she's smart and that she's doing well. And so he didn't agree with their, you know, thoughts on like, let's don't let her do this anymore or like just give up. So he suggested that she continue with her current field of study and then apply it to a career that would meet the terms of her probation.
Well, that's probably a better fit, probably. I would say.
But after this conversation, she was real discouraged and she only put minimal effort into her studies. And over the Easter holiday, she went to Betty and Georgie's, where Betty told her she didn't belong at the university. She belonged with people like her. So again, like, no, don't make yourself better. Don't, you know.
Right.
Betty had just always
be a piece of shit like me.
Yeah. Betty had always held contempt for the upper and middle class, even though the life that Georgie was currently providing her with was middle class. Like, they were doing well. They had a nice place.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was whatever. She just
held resentment for that.
Yeah. She's just a whack job and she wants to keep her kid down. You know, yeah. Mary went back to the university and she packed up her things and then she left and she went back to live with Betty and Georgie. After Mary left the university, she met two people who would change her life forever. A younger man who, for the story's purposes, was known as Rob. It's obviously not his real name because they said that he was known as Rob. And she got a new probation officer whose name was Pat Royston. Pat had looked over Mary's record before taking over her case, and she was hoping to gain insight into Mary. But she only found notes that contained information about bedwetting and Mary being a drama queen. And when she met Mary in person, she saw someone who had very low self-esteem, who was socially awkward, isolated, fatalistic, and self-defeating. So she's really down on herself, obviously.
Yeah.
Pat arranged a meeting with Betty to see if she could get more info from Betty regarding Mary's past and upbringing and see if, like, Betty could shed light on stuff. And Pat specifically asked Betty the question, why are you introducing her as your cousin? Like, what's that all about? So when that question happened, Betty wasn't having it.
Shocker.
And she shut down the interview like right away. And soon after the interview, Betty told Mary that she had to leave because she was tired of Mary being gone all hours of the night. And Betty couldn't sleep because she was so worried. But of course, Betty was drunk and high on pills and passed out most of the time. So it's like bullshit. She just, like, she's mad at her. She doesn't want her there.
Right.
Because this probation officer has come and asked questions to Betty about Mary.
Yeah.
So Mary ended up moving in with Rob, the younger man that she'd been seeing. And Betty didn't approve of or like Rob because, you know, he's younger and blah, blah, blah. But Georgie, her current husband, is also younger than her.
Oh, so she's younger than Mary?
No, younger than Betty.
Okay.
So she's just a hypocrite, you know.
Yeah.
And
she's
Betty,
just a hippogriff?
A hippogriff. A hypocrite.
I know you did.
Like, maybe it trailed off. I don't know.
I know. I said a hippogriff.
A hippogriff.
Yeah.
But also Betty didn't like Pat, the new probation officer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Probably because she was worried if Mary got too close to anyone, they would find out about the abuse that she had endured as a child. Betty tried to break up Rob and Mary on more than one occasion. She told them lies about Mary's past, and she told Rob that Mary was sterile. Mary had a strong desire to become a mother. She would often talk to the child that she had to abort and apologize for doing what she felt she had no other choice but to do. Rob was supportive of Mary's desire to become a mother. Pat, however, wanted Mary to undergo a psychiatric evaluation before moving forward with her plan to become a mother.
100% fair.
100% fair. And it would no doubt also be required by the courts because she's still being monitored by the courts. Obviously, she has this new probation officer. It's been assigned to her.
Right.
So I don't know if she ever got off probation. I didn't see anything about whether she did or didn't. And Mary happily agreed to it. And like Pat saw that as a positive sign that, you know, maybe Mary had really
grown up,
had really matured, like made actual steps in progress and rehabilitation.
Right.
So in therapy, Mary talked about Brian and Martin and the loss that she had caused and how it was suddenly very real to her. And it was something that she had caused. And she realized that it would never be over for their families.
What? Okay. Are you going to get into like what happened in Norma or what happened to the families of the little boys?
No.
Okay. I was just wondering.
No, it's just that like she's finally like
understanding the
gravity of what she did.
Yeah. The depth of her.
Well, and I think before she just kind of like boxed it up. Like she just didn't.
I shouldn't even say a monster.
Yeah. I think before she just kind of boxed it up and didn't. It wasn't something that she wanted to deal with or look at, you know?
Right. How could you want to look at yourself and look at the things that you've done after you've done those things?
Yeah. 100%.
If you have any kind of moral ground in you, you wouldn't want to look at those things.
No, you wouldn't.
Not that I'm saying she has a ton of morality, but
no, but she's like, you know, she's coming along. And after these sessions, she cried a lot and really like thought about what she did. And obviously at this point, she's having feelings of remorse, which is not something that she showed when she was a child.
Yeah.
Or like maybe not along the way of her imprisonment either. Because like I said, at Red Barn, they didn't let you focus on the past. They were like, nope, it's just the present. You know,
you're moving forward.
Yeah. Like we're not looking at the past, which, you know, sometimes you have to look at the past in order to get to the future. Mary ended up getting pregnant by Rob, and Pat made all the legal arrangements, all the proper legal arrangements. It was decided that the baby would be a ward of the court, but Mary and Rob would have the responsibility of caring for and raising the child.
What does that mean?
That they have to check in on the baby like all the time.
Well, I feel like that's fair.
Oh, 100%. And they knew that that was going to be a stipulation of her having a baby. So that was going to be part of it. And they had a little girl who was born on May 25th, 1984. And she would remain a ward of the court until she was 8 years old.
So they were checking in on her until she was eight.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, Rob and Mary broke up and Mary would end up with a new partner named Jim. But Rob stayed a part of his daughter's life for her whole. You know, she's still a part of her life, assuming he's alive, but I don't know. But he's younger than Betty, and Betty's like in her 60s. So assuming he's still alive.
Younger than Mary?
Yeah, he's younger than Mary. Sorry.
I'm like, wait, Rob is and Betty's in her. I'm so confused. I thought we were just talking about how she was 23. And then if it was 84, she was like 25. So how is she in her 60s?
Currently, she's in her 60s. And she had the baby in 1984.
Okay.
So she'd be 25. Born in 19, yeah, she was 11.
I think she's about 25.
And Mary didn't know if she wanted Betty to meet or have anything to do with her granddaughter. But just before Christmas in 1994, Mary got a call from Betty, who she hadn't seen in over a year. So the baby's 10 at this point.
Over a year?
Well, Mary hadn't seen her.
But the daughter hadn't met her.
No, she'd kept her daughter away from Betty.
Okay, that's probably for the best.
So Mary got a call from Betty. She hadn't seen Betty in over a year. The three of them had lunch and they had a really nice day. And Mary said that Betty seemed happier than she'd ever seen her. And like, just, you know, like happier, grounded, whatever. And overall, in general, I think not just that day and meeting her granddaughter, but like she had an overall like...
improvement.
Peace about her, maybe? Or she was settled? I don't know.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Mary ended up inviting Betty to spend Christmas with them. At this point, she's divorced from Georgie, so she doesn't want her to be alone at Christmas time. The family spent two wonderful days together. And a few days later, after this, Mary tried to call her. She couldn't get a hold of her. Neighbors hadn't seen her for a few days, so they called the police. And Betty was found dead in her apartment shortly after this, so before New Year's. An autopsy revealed that she had died from peritonitis and pneumonia, and she was found naked in a chair, and she was so close to her fireplace that one side of her body was charred.
Oh, fuck.
So she died while she was sitting there.
Nobody was smelling fucking skin burning?
I guess not. I guess not. But not like burning, but just like, I don't know.
Or the smell of your hair?
Yeah, I guess not. Evidence showed that Betty had woken in the middle of the night and stripped the sheets off of her bed. And they don't know if it was urine, vomit, sweat, because she's sick, real sick. And she went into the bathroom and took off the nightgown she was wearing. And she cleaned herself up. And then she went and sat next to the fireplace in the chair. And then that's where she died. And Mary thought that maybe she had committed suicide, but the police didn't think that that was the case because there were fresh vegetables in the kitchen that were in a pot that were going to be prepared to be cooked. And Mary also thought that Betty knew that she was dying, and that's why she wanted to spend time with them and why she, like, I don't know, is in a good place, because she maybe wants to just leave things in an up instead of a down, and she knows she's dying, you know?
I think that's fair.
I think it's fair also.
When people die, they do those things.
Yeah. When Mary's daughter was 14, the family was found by the press. And because of the lifelong anonymity that they were both given. So when Mary had the baby, the anonymity was extended to the baby. The courts moved them. And at this point, Mary wanted her daughter to know the truth about everything. Because obviously she
at 14,
she hadn't told her, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying she's going to spill everything, but like all of a sudden you're 14 and the press is hounding you.
Trust issues.
The press is hounding you and you got to like move and stuff. It's like, fuck.
Yeah, so, we better have this conversation.
Yeah, exactly. After Betty's death, Mary did a lot of soul searching and ended up working with a biographer whose name was Gitta Sereny, I think is how you say it. And she wrote the book called Cries Unheard, Why Children Kill, The Story of Mary Bell. And telling her story to this biographer was a huge step in Mary finally understanding why she had done what she did and helping her to heal the childhood trauma that she'd been through. The book was published in 1998 and was met with public outrage that a killer could profit from their crimes. This enraged the Prime Minister of the UK, Tony Blair, so much that laws were written to prevent this from ever happening again in the future.
So is she still profiting from it?
I would assume she is because the laws had to be moving forward, not going backward. Or maybe, I don't know.
Right, if there's a clause.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't read the law. Mary said the intention of the book was twofold. One, to quote, set the record straight. And also she thought if she told her story, the media and the press would stop always searching for her and her family. However, it did the opposite. And it just renewed interest in the Mary Bell case. And reporters ended up descending on their house and they were forced to leave with blankets over their heads, hiding from cameras and shouts from the media. And so, again, they're, like, uprooted.
Yeah.
But here's the story.
Why wouldn't they just leave the UK?
I don't know. I don't know why.
Maybe there wasn't any kind of protection that they could get outside of obviously being in their own government where they're granted this level of protection.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, or, you know, instead of, like, being within, like, England, go to Scotland or go to Wales or Ireland.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, sorry, continue.
No, that's okay. So here's how this happened. This is how Mary Bell got to be where Mary Bell was as a child. Mary's mother, Betty McCricket, was born in 1940 in Glasgow, Scotland. As a child, she was described as deeply religious. And she really liked religious things, in quotes. Her sister recalled that she liked to draw nuns and altars and graves and cemeteries. And according to family members, there was no abuse within her family or excessive punishments. But for some reason that's unknown or not understood by her family, she just started down a very dark path. When her father died, her sister Issa said, or Issa, Isa? It's ISA. How do you say that?
Isa
said that Betty became demented and she started throwing temper tantrums and she staged a drug overdose and she began a life of sex work.
Okay.
Mary,
that'll do it to you.
Mary Flora Bell was born May 26th, 1957 in Northumberland.
What's her birthday?
May 26th.
1957?
1957. Betty was 17 at the time of Mary's birth, and when the nurses handed Mary to Betty after her birth, Betty said, quote, take that thing away from me.
Oh, and do we know who her father is?
It was unknown who Mary's father was, although there is one theory that I'll get into towards the end.
Okay.
Mary was very neglected as a baby and a child. She was constantly injured while she was alone with her mother. When Mary was about 2 or 3, her mother dropped her out of a first floor window and Mary suffered a concussion. Her childhood was also a roller coaster of abandonment and drug overdoses. When she was 1, she almost overdosed after eating pills that were hidden, quote, in a narrow nook. And people thought it was strange that a baby would eat the tart pills and also that a baby could get to the pills.
Well, that's what I was thinking about the Tylenol thing in part one, remember? With, what was it, Martin or was it Brian?
It was Martin.
Yeah, with Martin, the Tylenol bottle that was by him. Like, why would he be eating Tylenol?
Right,
aspirin. Doesn't taste like, aspirin, sorry. It doesn't taste like candy.
It does not.
It tastes disgusting.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. In 1960, Betty took Mary to an adoption agency, and then she just ended up selling her to a woman who was unable to adopt a child. Betty just handed Mary over to a complete stranger for money.
Excellent.
And
a very Charlie Manson mother.
Her sister, Issa was suspicious of Betty's actions that day, and she followed her, and she was able to track down the woman and get Mary back.
That is literally like a fucking, what's the word I'm looking for? That looked like a mirror looking back with the Charles Manson story when he was a baby.
Oh, yeah, and his mom sold him.
And then his family went and tracked him down.
Yeah. Betty would drop Mary off at relatives' houses for long periods of time so that she could go work. She would always come back for Mary, even though several relatives offered to permanently keep her. By the age of 2, Mary was already refusing to bond with people, and she didn't cry when she got hurt, and she was already starting to show aggressive and violent behavior.
At two.
Because she's
neglected.
She's had a drug overdose. She's been dropped out of a fucking window.
Yeah, Betty probably should have just left her at one of the relatives.
She should have. When she was 3, she was found eating little blue pills that were mixed in with candy that her Aunt Kathy had given her. And Betty said she must have taken them out of her purse.
What the fuck?
Yeah. After this event, Betty's sister Kathy and her husband offered to adopt Mary, but Betty refused. And soon after that, she broke ties with her family.
Do we think that Betty's trying to poison her? She's trying to kill her? Mm-hmm. Is that what's going on here?
Yeah. Well, I'm getting to that.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's okay.
Because she's like, oh, she must have just grabbed them out of the bag.
Yeah, whoops. And a 1-year-old baby also got pills out of a narrow nook that was kind of high up. So yeah,
make it make sense.
Yeah, exactly. The most serious overdose came when Mary swallowed a bunch of iron pills. She lost consciousness and had to have her stomach pumped. Mary, as well as the playmate she was with at the time, said that Betty had given her the, quote, smarties that made her sick.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Betty was a drama queen and she craved attention. And it is believed that it's believed that she may have suffered from Munchausen by proxy syndrome. And she used Mary's overdoses and frequent injuries as a way to get attention for herself. The second theory is that Mary was a product of incest.
Absolutely. Ooh.
And she was trying to get rid of her and the memory of how she was conceived. But we don't know either theory. We don't know. We don't know what the truth is there.
Okay.
So we just know that her mom is super fucked up.
Yeah, clearly. And I mean, you didn't even have to say your mom's an attention whore. We already learned about that earlier in this episode and last episode when she's showing up in the courtroom making a scene and then when she's bringing her kid lingerie to put on and telling her to pose for pictures.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
What the fuck is right? Betty married Billy Bill when Mary was still a baby, and he became her father. But as I said before, he was an alcoholic, and he was in and out of jail for crimes, you know, various different crimes, robbery and whatnot.
Yeah.
However, fortunately or unfortunately, Billy was the only truly loving, stable parent in Mary's life. So as stable as that can be, that's your best option.
At least she has someone.
That's your best option. Well, when he's there, because he's in and out of jail all the time.
Yeah, career criminal.
Yeah. As a child, Mary witnessed her 5-year-old friend get hit and killed by a bus.
Oh,
this was
that would be rough.
Yeah. This was yet another reason for Mary to withdraw from human connections. In 1961, Mary started kindergarten and her teacher said, quote, Mary was always naughty. And she once saw Mary trying to strangle a classmate. When she was corrected, Mary said, why? Can it kill him? So
what the fuck? I feel like from a psychological standpoint, yes, she's been bred to be fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad. Like I said, I sympathize for these things happening, but like, I don't sympathize for the fact that she took 2 innocent children's lives.
No, not at all.
I just don't sympathize with that.
So because of the way Mary acted, she was often alone and she was teased and she was taunted by the other kids. And that made her lash out even more, kicking and punching the kids. And also, according to teachers and other people, she, quote, told tall stories all the time. So she lied.
Yeah.
Or she was a big embellisher or whatever.
Right. That makes sense.
It was around this time and maybe when she was a little bit younger that she became a bedwetter. And Mary would punish her by, or Betty, sorry, Betty would punish Mary by rubbing her nose in the urine and then putting the urine-soaked mattress out the window for everyone to see. And then she would broadcast that Mary had wet the bed.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And this continued until Mary was arrested, which is why she refused to sleep after her arrest. Because remember I said she wouldn't fall asleep. And if she did, she like woke up real startled. Because she thought if her own mother punishes her so severely over wetting the bed, imagine what the cops are going to do to her.
Did they ever cure this bedwetting issue?
I believe so. So the reason for Mary's...
Oh, I was going to say, or because of all the overdoses she's had, maybe she's incontinent.
The reason for Mary's bedwetting, anger, and outbursts is a tragic story in and of itself. So now here we go on that.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Her mother, Betty, as I said, was a sex worker specializing in bondage. She was a dominatrix. Her family knew that she was a sex worker, but they had no idea that Betty sometimes brought her work home. The house that the
Maisie
family...
Maisie Gibbons.
The house that the family lived in was Betty, Billy, Mary, and Mary's younger sister. And it was just kind of a series of random rooms.
Mary's younger sister?
Mary's younger sister. So she has a younger sister. She has a younger brother, too. But at this time, I don't... At this time...
Did we talk about this?
No.
That she was one of three?
No. No, I didn't talk about any other kids.
I was like, what the... That's why that just, like, shocked me. Because you talked about Brian's sister. And you talked about Norma's siblings. And
well, that's because they're an integral part of the story.
Yeah, but you haven't talked about her siblings.
They're not an integral part of the story.
Yeah, but they were there.
They were there, except for that they never witnessed any of the abuse and none of the abuse was ever directed towards them.
Oh, so she only cares about her own.
Which is why I think, like they said, that they that one of the theories is that she was a product of incest and like of her dad and that she was trying to get rid of.
Betty's.
Yeah, Betty.
Okay.
So, yeah. But it's a theory. It's just a theory because Betty or because Mary was the only one that she treated so poorly. Like, she disciplined the other kids.
So she was good to her other kids?
Well, she disciplined them, but, you know, they all suffered neglect and, you know, some form of abuse because she's gone.
She wasn't trying to kill them. And,
yeah, but she wasn't trying to kill them.
Like she kept trying to do with Mary.
I mean, Mary definitely got the worst of it. Let's just say that. So anyway, the house is like kind of a mishmash series of just random rooms. And they had set up the living room as a bedroom that the entire family shared. So the whole family is in the living room as this big bedroom. And the rest of the house is just these random rooms, right?
That's weird.
It's weird. When Mary was just 4 years old, she remembered her mother pulling her into a room that was covered pretty much floor to ceiling with rosaries and crucifixes. And this was the first time that, and trigger warning, real serious trigger warning here for child abuse and sexual abuse and real bad shit. This was the first time that Mary had ever seen a naked man. And she had no idea what was to come, but she was really scared. And her mother whispered in her ear, "It's okay. No one is going to get hurt." Then her mother stripped her naked and held her down forcibly, using something that Mary could only describe vaguely was a device that was used to hold her mouth open while the man masturbated and ejaculated into her mouth. And she's fucking 4 years old.
What the fuck?
And her mother whispered in her ear to be a good girl and swallow. And Mary was unable to stop herself from vomiting and crying. So, and
what sick and twisted fucks.
Betty called the abuse that continued for several years games, quote, games that she would play with Mary.
And so her clients are fucking pedophile sicko motherfuckers.
Exactly.
And Betty's promising them little kid fun.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's horrible.
That's disgusting.
It's terrible. One game she played was called the Blind Man's Buff. She blindfolded Mary and lifted her up in the air and spun her around before any physical interaction with the clients. The abuse progressed from masturbation to, you know, full penetration. Betty was always looking to increase her income, and she realized that there was a market for selling her young daughter for sexual encounters.
What the fuck?
Yeah. On several different occasions, She tied Mary up and she whipped her because, again, she's bondage, dominatrix, all that whole thing. And Mary had to participate in several different types of these encounters on several different occasions. And she would take Mary sometimes to clients' homes for the purpose of sex. And on the way home, she would buy her chips or candy. And she convinced Mary that if she told anyone, that she would be the one that got in trouble and that she would be the one that got arrested. That Mary would. Mary would be in trouble.
4, 5, 6 year old. Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. Fucked up.
It's so fucked up.
Oh my God.
Like I said, this was so super hard for me to do. And then how I keep talking about her is because I know this is coming. And so it's like, I don't know. I have all this. I have a lot of different emotions about this whole situation.
A lot of feelings.
Yeah, a lot of feelings.
I don't blame you because, I mean, I'm an empath through and through and through. And it fucking sucks. And it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible, horrible, horrible for this little girl.
Well, and when I read that very first part, when I like read that, I literally gasped. I was like, oh my God. Like I'm reading a fucking book and I'm out loud going, oh my God. Like, fuck.
Yeah, like, that's horrible. Yeah. I'm like, that's.
Because I mean, you know, shit's going on, but. You don't know this shit's going on. Like, no. You don't see this coming.
No, not that she's fucking. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No, didn't see any of this part of it coming.
No. One of Billy's very good friends, a man named Harry, rented a room in the family's house. And one time he awoke to Mary unzipping his pants and trying to touch his penis. And he was super startled. And he asked Mary, what the hell are you doing? And when he did that, she looked super distressed. Like she was like, oh my God. And he told her that he wasn't mad. And he tried to explain why this was inappropriate behavior. And he took her to the kitchen and they had a cup of tea. And he said, hey, I'm still going to be your friend, like, but that's not okay. And later he said if he only would have realized that this was an indicator of sexual abuse, it was a huge regret in his life that he wished that he would have understood what was happening. And maybe he could have not only saved Mary, but prevented Martin and Brian's deaths.
Well, that's a pretty heavy weight to place on yourself.
It is. It is. Because but I think people just don't recognize that. But I mean, if a kid does that, something's going on. That's like, not normal kid behavior.
That's not normal kid behavior in the slightest.
Mary learned the connection between sex and money, and she began hustling herself. She started getting into cars with men when she was about 8 years old. And she knew that what the men did to her was something that they wanted to keep a secret and that they would give her money to keep quiet. And if the men refused to pay what Mary wanted them to pay, she would tell them that her uncle was around the corner and she would go tell him what they had just done to her. And Mary enjoyed watching the men squirm and she enjoyed the power that she held over them after that happened, you know?
Well, yeah, I would say that would probably be the only thing about it that you could leverage, that would be the only part of it that, you know, she's been exposed to all of this, so she might as well fucking hustle her way through it,
right?
Because and she's been exposed to all this fucked upness.
Well, and they so
might as well be able to go buy her own fucking chips and a Barbie.
Yeah, no kidding. So they asked her if Betty knew that she was doing this, because all of this is coming out as she's an adult. Like none of this is coming out as a child.
Right.
This is obviously through therapy as an adult that she's getting to all. Because the biographer that she worked with, that was biographer, therapist, like
it was a whole team.
It was a whole thing. Mental health. Yeah, exactly. And they asked her if she knew or if Betty knew that she was doing it. And Mary was like, no, because if she knew I was doing it, then she would have wanted the money that I was getting. And like, that was my money. I was earning that money.
Right. That was what I was thinking, is that like, you know, her mom's already fucked her up enough that if, you know, she can have some kind of leverage her own money.
Yeah.
God, it's so fucked up.
It's horrible.
And I don't mean to say that in like a, you know, that kind of a way that I feel like it might have come off. But like, yeah, obviously Betty didn't know, you know, she's making her do, she exposed her to this world. And she's fucking 8 years old doing this. Yeah, she doesn't want to tell her mom so she can keep the money.
Right. And she's like, obviously, just shut down emotionally.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. On the day of Martin's murder, she and Betty had gotten into a violent altercation. And Mary, unfortunately, took her rage out on an innocent child. And in the book, she goes into full detail of what happened. But I'm not going to do that.
Good call.
So, but
we know she killed him.
Well, she didn't go with the intention of killing him, but, you know, it was she got mad at him and she just took it out on him. And then obviously after the fact, going and fucking with the family gave her a sense of power and control, which she didn't have. She had no power and she had no control.
Yeah.
So that was her outlet for that. Not making excuses, not condoning it, just facts. That's what it was.
Just stating what happened.
Just stating the facts. So unfortunately for Mary, there were so many missed opportunities that she could have been helped without any of the help. That's what led to the deaths of Martin and Brian, because she, you know, she had been choking kids. She had been shoving sand down their throat. They vandalized that nursery school like over and over and over again. There's shit saying something's wrong here. Something's wrong here.
Right.
And nobody did anything. Social services was only called to the Bell House on one occasion, and Betty kicked them out and they never followed up or came back.
That's fucking fucked up that you can just kick out social services.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that that should be a thing.
Yeah, no shit.
So getting to the bottom of these memories helped Mary to understand why she did what she did. And obviously we don't excuse it. And
no, we don't condone the behavior in the slightest.
No, not at all. She was a very abused little girl and perhaps also had traumatic brain injuries from repeated overdoses and the concussion that she had as a result of being dropped out the window. And she was hurt and she was lashing out. And she was overall, she wasn't an evil child or a bad seed. She was neglected, abused, and angry.
Yeah.
And she lashed out.
That's what she did.
Yeah. Because there's that whole thing of nature versus nurture.
I would say this is definitely a nurture one.
This is a nurture one.
Unless she was a product of incest. But I mean, they said that they don't know how Betty got involved to be the way that she did. Her sibling said that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why there's that speculation that perhaps she was a product of incest.
Yeah. Well, it's like her sister said that after their dad died that she became demented. So maybe she was pregnant when her dad died or, I mean, obviously, I don't know. I don't know.
I feel like you could become demented because of like your upsetness.
Yeah.
Right. Like your sorrow and your sadness.
I think we just don't know. You know, we don't know. All we know for sure is that she was abused and she was neglected.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, she became a murderer.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. The nature versus nurture argument. This is obviously the nurture argument.
Yeah, 100%. To this day, Mary has never reoffended and she's shown true remorse for her crimes. And she understands that the loss that she is responsible for and the void she created in the lives of everyone who knew and loved Martin and Brian. And like she gets the gravity of that, right? And she knows that no apologies will ever be enough for the heartbreak that she's caused. And by all accounts, she's a good mother and her daughter had a baby and she's a good grandmother. And yeah, the story is a fucking tragedy all the way around from the beginning to the end. And I hated reading it and I hated researching it. But once I started it, because like I said, I thought I knew it and it would be quick. And I really thought she's just a bad seed. She's an evil child. Like that was my thought in the beginning. But once I started reading it and learning what was going on and researching the whole thing and putting all the pieces together, I thought that it was important to tell the whole entire story. And maybe by me telling this story, it will help somebody to recognize maybe if this is going on with a child that they know.
Right.
Recognize bedwetting is a sign of sexual abuse, anger, violent outbursts, withdrawal, and isolation.
Okay, so is bedwetting that's a sign of sexual abuse?
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a sign of trauma. So, but all of those things, you know, are no matter whether it's sexual abuse or just abuse, and I don't say just abuse lightly, but sexual abuse or otherwise abuse, something bad is happening in that kid's world if these things are going on.
Yeah.
So that's why I told the whole thing after I started it, because I was like, oh, it's sad.
So I have a few things.
Okay, please do.
Well, one, that's a horrible, sad story.
Yeah.
So fucking terrible. So did she ever, or do we know anything about Martin O'Brien's families now?
The only thing that I know that Martin's mom said that when she became a grandmother, that she said that
Martin's mom became a grandmother.
No, when Mary became a grandmother, when her daughter had a baby, that she hoped that when she looked at that baby, that she saw Martin. Oh. So that was the only thing that I saw. That's
probably terribly fair.
Yeah.
Sad, but fair.
Yeah.
No, what I was going to say is the things that I've heard about this, obviously the killings, and I had heard that she had a baby. I didn't know the in and out and the reform school and all that. I knew that she had had a baby and I knew that her mom was a sex worker, but I didn't know that, she was being forced to turn tricks, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
That's so fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like saying turning tricks isn't a good thing to say, but I think it's the most polite way I could say all the bullshit that was happening.
Yeah, she was being used as a way to make money.
Used and abused, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's so fucking sad.
So fucking sad.
Well, do you have any other thoughts?
No.
Could me neither. Then I'd like to wrap this one up because it's so fucking horribly sad. It's
terrible.
But I mean, thank you for doing it because I didn't know to the extent of which, I just said, but I just told you what I knew about it, but not all the fucked upness. Oh, one more question. Do we know anything about the siblings?
After Betty died, they all kind of got together, but it was really overly formal and they didn't have anything in common with Mary because they had not really grown up with her because she was incarcerated.
From the house. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I don't think she has really tight family ties.
Or
except for her daughter and granddaughter and Norma, her current partner. Don't know. Didn't look.
Didn't care to look into Norma.
Yeah, exactly. This was enough.
This was enough fuckery.
Yeah, it was enough. So it didn't, she got off. She participated in the second one and who knows why, if it was, if she was wanted to do it or if she was forced to do it or who knows.
Right. If Mary was exercising the power over her.
Yeah. We don't know. So I don't know.
Thanks for bringing the full story.
Yeah.
It's really sad. Horrible. It's
fucking horrible. So yeah, that's my two-part shorty that
shoddy.
I thought I knew, but I didn't know. I knew none of that. Like I said in the beginning, I even thought this was in the fucking 1800s. So clearly, I really don't know shit.
Now I'm going to need to sage the fuck out of myself. And I have a real bad headache still. It's just made it worse and more depressing.
Yeah, it's super depressing.
You have tears in your eyes and I had tears in my eyes. It's so fucking sad.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
So on that note.
Sayonara.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Oh, wait. We can't bye-bye just yet.
Yeah. People know where to get us.
Yeah, you do. If you don't know by now, then go back to the end of some of the other episodes.
Yeah, we have an Instagram and stuff.
Because we're signing off now. This is horrible. Bye.